Channel One over, and a continuation visit with Marion Hodge, Suzanne Mark, this Saturday lunch, 9th of October, 71. Channel One over, and a continuation visit with Marion Hodge, Mark, Suzanne, this Saturday at lunch, the 9th of October, 71, after the Audubon field trip. Channel One over, and a continuation visit with Marion Hodge, Mark, Suzanne, Saturday at lunch, the 9th of October, 71.
Country. Folly really worked out.
Yes, he did. And the Audubon people never come out, and I don't see why.
Yes, yeah, I know.
Well, there's so many things to get excited about, interested in, and spend your energies on, you know, if you just have that many lives to live.
There are a lot of nice people in the Audubon Society now, a lot of young people coming in. Started with Joe Little, I think. Well, Joe and some of his friends, they came when Wally was taking a field trip, and
yeah, well, a lot of young people.
Yeah.
What they today?
Discovering what they're interested in now. There's been some people interested in that for a long time before they were born.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to see that there's some youthful energy into these. Organizations that have been at work for decades and decades.
Well, you know, it was the Alachua Audubon Society really that were the forerunners of the Florida Defenders, weren't they?
I guess.
When this map was first discovered about what they were going to do with the Akawaha, it was the little Alachua Audubon Society that got the maps printed and paid for them and mailed them out.
Oh.
And, you know, we were only about 70 members then. I think there are, how many now, 300 members or something? I mean, grown.
I remember our first time we ever saw the Okawaha, when my father and mother and I were taking a boating trip up there, and that's when we found out they were going to ruin it. The first time we'd seen it, and we thought, why, we'll come back here all the time.
I was down on the other
map.
A few weeks ago, a friend of Dick's from Texas was here, a girl that he'd met, and they'd had classes together, and she had been in some linguistics classes, but she's interested in the English Language Institute here. So I met her when I was out here and visiting Dick a year ago. So she came to stay with me. Couple weeks, and some friends took us down on the Akawaha, and I was so mad. I could hardly stand it, because I had been there when we first came to Florida. We used to go on the Akawaha, and it was so beautiful.
And what did you see now? Is it?
Well,
was there trash to be seen, or was the bank denuded, or just what?
Well, the park that we went, you can see all kinds of things there. What they did to it, for one thing, they smashed the trees all down with some kind of
ring powers machine that was supposed to just walk over the trees.
I've seen those huge machines.
Yeah, and it smashed them down, and then they made Grodman Dam there, and then flooded all of that, and it flooded acres and acres and acres of trees.
And the trees didn't stay down.
No, and the trees that were supposed to stay down popped up again, so you can't get to. So the people who were going to have such marvelous boating, they also You see, this was a flowing river, and it didn't get all these weeds in that you're getting stagnant pools, and now they're having a big problem about weeds. And that was also foreseen and predicted.
Yeah.
And then, oh, the river was beautiful. You, if I'll give this book, it has some pictures in it. Here, this river goes like this through this forest on each side. It did. And so now what it does is go like, it's just a ditch with, you know, and, oh my goodness, it's terrible. It really makes you so mad that I thought I never could go back there again.
I couldn't.
Well, I didn't want to, but Ricky did. She'd heard Dick talk so much about the and there's some parts that they say they haven't touched, but they've sheared the banks off, you know, so. And you used to go on this river in a canoe, we used to go, and you go around a bend, and it would be so beautiful, it would literally take your breath away, didn't it? And
the current was so swift, too.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see 100 yards ahead.
Yeah, and
the next bend.
Well, then you it would be time to go home, but you think, well, go around one more bend because you want to know what was going to be. It was so beautiful, you just never wanted to stop.
Yeah.
You want to keep on going. And then... one time I was down with Dick, and I don't know where Wally was then. He didn't go with us anyway, but a couple of other people in the canoe, and we, you know, went up a little place off the river and pulled the canoe up on a bank and ate our lunch there, and up on a log we pulled the canoe. And these trees are so high, you feel as though you're in a cathedral, and Dick. And it was so quiet there, and we suddenly discovered we were just whispering to each other. Didn't want to make any noise. And there would be birds flying around, but or an alligator splashing somewhere, but that would be the only sound. And it was very unique. And we had a friend who came from Germany, Austria, Vienna, to visit us, Frieda von Bohlen, and we used to go when we were there. She said, if you come to, we were in Salzburg on vacation, she said, if you'll come to Berlefeld, I'll show you the most beautiful place in Europe. And so it was in the Austrian Alps, and so her husband was, you've heard the Krupps, you know, they make munitions. Well, her husband was Alfred Krupp's brother. Alfred was the oldest, and then Sita's husband was the next oldest. And these Krupps, maybe this bores you, but they are sort of an interesting family. And we met Sita. Did you ever hear of Ethel Newcomb? Well, a long time ago, she was a concert pianist in Vienna, and she was a pupil of Liszt-Tisky, say it right. And she was his, when royalty came to Vienna, she was an American.
Mm-hmm.
She was a friend of ours back up in New York State. She, when royalty came, there would be a soiree, and Liszt-Tisky would have Ethel play. And she was really tremendous. And she met awfully interesting people in Vienna. And she and Sita's mother were best friends, and Mark Twain's daughters were there.
Oh.
And Sita's mother and I got to be real good friends. Her name was Madinger, Alison Madinger. And she was always talking about the Clemens girls. He was always writing to the Clemens girls. But anyhow, that's how then Sita was her daughter. Of course, she was younger. And Sita was married to this... they call them, in Europe, they call them Krupp von Bohlen and Halbach. They don't call them Krupp over here. And so this place, she said, is the most beautiful place in Europe. And if you come up to Verifol, she was staying up there with her mother. And with her mother-in-law, who was Bertha Krupp, the one who used the big guns when they came after. She was a nice person, though, Bertha.
Not anything like the gun.
No. And so Wally went fishing. He didn't want to go up to Verifol. So he went fishing, but Wally's driver took Dick and me. We went up and up and up and up. And then it leveled off. And then on this level plain was this tremendous hunting lodge. It had been a palace that had belonged to an archbishop at some time or other. And it had been made into this hunting lodge by the Krupp. And then on top of this plain, the Austrian Alps still went up, you know, tremendously high. And it was very beautiful. But Sita had a hunting lodge of her own near mine at Sella. We really liked better than this one. It wasn't. But anyhow, Sita came to see us. That's what I get back to Akawaha pretty soon. She came to visit Wally and me, and we took her down on the Akawaha. Because to us, it compared in beauty, really, with anything that Europe had to offer. And Sita thought so, too. She was tremendously impressed. And then she came back again after they dug the ditch. Wally and I met her at Tampa. She'd gone to a wedding down in South America. Then she said, I may as well come around and see you by way of Florida. So she did, and I'm so glad she did. It was just the summer before Wally died, you know. And Wally liked her so much. Her husband died. And in the war, he was flying a Messerschmitt, and the oxygen tank froze. But her husband, his uncle had a silver factory outside of Vienna. So he went to Austria, and he manufactured silver. And Alfred Krupp and the other Krupp stayed in Germany and manufactured munitions. But anyway, so coming back from Tampa, we showed her what was happening to the river, and she just couldn't believe it. And so, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
And
how far back was it that you and Wally got interested in that?
In the river?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when
you came down about 60, 50?
1960. When did you come?
57.
We came in 60.
Yeah.
Wally retired in 60.
I felt like I'd been here a good long time before you. I met you all out there at the mill hopper.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you had 3 years is quite a time. You had quite a start on it. You must have come about the time Tony and Tom Humphries came.
Yes. But now, you all picked it up right then, didn't you?
Yes, as soon as we came. You see, Wally had always been interested in birds.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we heard about the Audubon Society and we joined. And then it was very soon after that that we got hold of this map. And
mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we've been having meetings, conservation meetings about, don't you remember, even before that, we had speakers come to the Audubon meetings from all over the state about different things that had to do with the what might be going to happen in the
mm-hmm.
state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we first got onto it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know how we got the map. It was through somebody who worked for the state, who the map wasn't supposed to be given out.
And that was the beginning.
When we found out what happened in the river. Yeah.
Now, Wally hadn't gone, before he retired, he hadn't got into it. Jobs like this.
No, he didn't have any time. But he loved nature and flowers. And when he had some kind of artillery battalion, he was captain then, beginning World War II. No, he had a battery. He was a captain and just had a battery. And they would be out at Fort Sill and they'd be dashing across the desert out there, and Wally would see a cactus or something and the battery would stop. Wally would go out and look at the cactus. They thought it was so funny. But he really, really liked it very much. And in Europe, that's how we got to some fabulous places like these hunting lodges, you know, because Wally liked the, well, he didn't like to hunt, but he loved to fish, trout fish. And so we met a lot of interesting people and got to know them real well, but through his liking of nature. When he was a little boy.
In case you don't know how a baby feels when they wet the diaper.
You had cream in it too. That's too bad. Does he do that often, Faye?
Well, more often than you think.
I guess the baby keeps a straight face.
Oh, well, you're blushing, guy. My goodness.
Oh, shoot.
Well, I often wondered about that, whether Wally went around collecting jobs like this.
No, I've forgotten what he did when he was... Well, he was pretty busy in the Army. He never had a lot of time. Except when he had leave, and then we'd go off to some place in the country.
Yeah.
We never did get to a lot of countries in Europe because when we went back again, we would go trotting right back to Austria because we liked it. Well, we did get to a few places, but I mean, not like if we had any time, we'd go back to Austria from Germany. I mean.
Well, now, how did you get over to Europe in the first place?
Well, right after the war, Wally...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, he was sent to Vienna.
I see.
And so then Dick and I went over, and we were there 3 years.
After the war?
Mm-hmm, 46.
Gee whiz.
Yeah. And then we were home 3 years, and then we went back again. And then we... Let's see. Yes, we were home 3 years, and then we went back to Germany. And then we were home a while, and we'd go back again.
Well, is that right? Well, you all just took up with them over there.
Yeah, we never did get to the Pacific side.
Do you find problems in Europe and in Germany and Austria of a conservation nature, of a serious nature, as you find in the States, or do you think that this woman who visited the river here, Flavo, will learn a great deal from this and perhaps be of use when she comes back to defending the land?
Well, I'm sure she will if she knows the...
At least talking
I'm
about
sure it. She'll talk about
it. Look what could happen here because of and I'll tell you about what I saw in Florida.
You know, she knew in Salzburg, she knew a naturalist who is a friend of Archie Carr. And she knew him quite well. He'd been a friend of her father's and mother. And I send these people all the for Christmas presents. Wally sent them another magazine. He sent them the Atlantic Monthly. But and they liked that too because they all speak English very well. But I, after Wally died, I sent them the Audubon, National Audubon magazine. I think it's beautiful.
It's one of those beautiful magazines.
Did you read, Archie Carr has quite an article in the last one. I haven't had time to read it. Did you read it? I haven't had time to read it yet, but
It's very interesting. Of course, he doesn't stick with the moss. He talks
about trees, doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, the trees and the kind of in a moss forest, the sort of the frogs. And the,
oh, really? I'll have to read it.
The life that goes on underneath the moss, also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
very interesting.
Chuck, sit on good right now. That's the issue.
I have it home.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I just have it home. I've been working on that New Yorker thing. And then I read mysteries at night because I can't sleep. But,
now, 3 years in Germany is a good while.
It was a good while. I liked it better in Austria, though. Of course, Vienna, you would like it. But I like Germany. But it was so different when we were in Germany. When we were in Vienna, it was right after the war, and Wally was in what they called the Vienna Area Command. And they had English, British, French, and Russian were in Vienna then.
Mm-hmm.
And those four made up the Vienna Area Command. And but we met a lot of Austrians through Sita's mother. We met an awful lot of nice people. And but then we also met these other nationalities too, and you had parties, and while he worked with them, and but we still were very much a part of Europe. We were lucky that first winter. Gee, people didn't have anything to eat; it was dreadful, and they didn't have any heat in their houses, and it was so cold. And, for example, Sita's mother had a beautiful place on the Weringerstrasse, you know, like a whole palace of itself. And so big that these big doors would open up and the cars would drive, and I suppose coaches used to drive in there. You'd drive up to these winding stairs with red carpets, actually, that would wind around up to the first floor up there where they would have the parties, I suppose, and things. But she just lived in a couple rooms in there that winter, and it was so cold. I would go see her and sit on her davenport, and she had a big fur robe, and she would wrap it all around me, and you could see her breath in the living room. That's the way they lived, and they didn't have anything to eat. They were really hungry. When Wally got to Vienna, Alice was a little person. She wasn't tall, but she weighed 87 pounds. She was very, very thin. And Wally wrote to Ethel Newcomb, and he knew that he said that he was there, and if she had any friends, she would like him to look up. And she said, "So worried about my dear friend Allison Madinger. Will you please look her up?" And Wally did. Then that's how we met her and be friends. But anyhow, it was then we really lived very much a part of life, of European life in Vienna. Then in Germany, we were on a big army post.
Mm-hmm.
What did they call it? I forgot what it was called now. And it was as big, General Reber was the commanding officer, and it was as big as the state of Rhode Island in the middle of Germany. And of course, there were a lot of Germans in this, but there were, I can't tell you how much American equipment and things. And there we were at the Army headquarters, and Wally was on the general staff, and we were so busy, really, with Army affairs, American Army affairs, that I felt almost as though I were on an army post in the United States, except when I got away on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
But Wally's job was, he met an awful lot of Germans because he was G5, which had to do with the German population and the land and all that sort of thing. So we did, we'd go to parties in all of those towns around there, you know, dances and things. So we did get to know them, but we didn't get to know anybody so intimately as we did in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Faye's getting tired. Go on.
since you
I'm not
be
tired.
Tired. I
no,
bet
I'm
you've
not
been
tired.
Up since early
mm-hmm.
morning, haven't
no, I'm
you?
I'm not tired. I'm just going to...
She
gonna
can't
my
listen.
She
gets arthritis.
Don't pay attention to God, Mary. I'm just
going to see how your heart feels.
I just
want
to
hear
that.
Did you... have you recently seen the Blue Danube? What was it called? The Blue Danube.
It was the Blue Danube. It wasn't blue, but it.
Yeah. Is that really in as bad a shape as I've heard it to be in?
Well,
is any animal life, marine life, and
I really don't know. That's when you asked me if they had problems over there. I don't know. You see, the places that we visited were big. Well, like Cedar, she would have thousands of acres of woodland, and it would be beautifully taken care of.
Well,
there was a hunting
that
would belong to the family, but I don't know who it belongs to now. But
so you have to stay in the tape and pursue what you know they already know. Otherwise, you're directing it.
Yeah. But I have read that the Rhine River is the most polluted river in the world, practically the Rhine
really?
In Germany. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's unusual, Marion. In your G5, and you did get out.
And you're in Germany.
Yeah. To the places and the little dancers and salt
to
people.
Just little towns around.
Well, we were in a place called Kaiserslautern,
mm-hmm.
and that was, well, it had been an industrial city, I believe, before the war, trains and things,
mm-hmm.
and, but it, and it was very near the Black Forest, and not far from Frankfurt, which is really nice, and, so we did get out, but I mean, it didn't feel as much a part of the life of Germany as we did the part of life of Austria.
Yeah.
And, but Otto can tell you, he said, I know all the public forests are taken care of over there. They don't cut them down the way we do here. And they are
very
neat,
good.
You know. And the Black Forest, you drive through there, and it's, you don't. See, there's not underbrush or anything. They somehow rotate their growing of crops and things. But about the pollution and streams and things, I wouldn't have any idea because I haven't been there in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to get out of the beast and, you know, sort of touch the life. That's and you had such a long time to do it, relatively, you know.
Yeah, I used to
tell
you.
What, a 6-week tour?
Yeah.
Did Wally ask for that?
Yeah. Yes, he did. When he got back from overseas after the war, he went to Columbia for a while and took studied there quite a bit. Do you remember Jim Arnold that was here when Wally died? Remember this friend of Wally's that was here? You probably don't remember that day, but he and Jim went to Cornell together, and they went to Columbia together after the war, and they were both sent to Vienna together, and when I think he put in for duty back in Europe again after he'd been here 3 years.
From Vienna?
And Jim?
No, I guess that by that time we were out of Vienna.
Hmm.
Now Jim was over there too?
Jim Arnold?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He was in Vienna too. So it was funny that our lives paralleled each other so much.
Isn't
and
it
was a funny thing about the Thompsons too, you know. Percy Thompson was Wally's first.
I see what you do. You're not leaving it. You're holding it open. And
what are you doing?
I'm telling you. No, I'm telling you how what I've learned about talking through people.
I don't believe you.
I'm trying to tell you now. What I'm doing is holding it open.
What's he
so
doing?
I'm trying to tell Mark what I have learned from taping about talking to people.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm not directing you. I'm not taking you off. I'm not interested in what in the condition of pollution over there. I'm interested in what you and Wally did.
Oh, I see.
And I'm not telling you to say it. I'm just holding it open for you.
Oh, I see. You're just returning to
it. I'm not leading it. I'm just trying to tell Mark.
There's no direction.
No.
No direction. It's just holding it open.
Just going back with a question.
No, there's no question to it. I haven't asked you questions.
Yeah.
I don't ask questions.
No. I thought you asked me, did Wally put in for this?
I didn't ask you a question. I said, it's just hard to think that Wally put in for this.
No, that isn't what you said.
I said, and Wally put in for this.
Well, maybe you did that. Yeah. Maybe
but I didn't stop you. I went along with you.
Yeah.
I see Suzanne, we worked together on it a good bit, and she knows what I'm talking about.
You do tape.
No, you see, what I found out, I've taped a good deal out here and studied the tapes, and what I've found is that a direct question, you see, like this one on pollution of the rivers over there, she doesn't know anything about that, and what I'm interested in is
what I do know.
Is what she knows and what she and Wally did.
So how do you know whether or not someone knows this? Doesn't know anything about the question.
I listen to them.
Mm.
I project.
So you can foresee that they would not know.
You have to know ahead of time. Yes,
mm-hmm.
You have to foresee it. Just like you handle cattle. You've got to know ahead of time where they're going to move
in
order to keep them from going that way.
Well, his question was good, though, because, I mean, he said, through these friends, had I heard about, you know, pollution over there. But I don't know how active they are in... except in talking,
Well, I had no idea that you all had all that background over there.
Didn't know Wally was there.
I had no idea. I knew he had done interesting things, you know.
He's almost been out of this country more than in it in the last 20, 30 years. Country that he really, we were going to take some trips, you know, you're always so busy. He retired and then he got busy and then his family up north, when we had vacation, we'd always go up there.
Oh, that's right, you all headed up there
once
a year anyhow, didn't you?
Then almost all of his family died and...
See, I'm going along with her. Yeah. Talk about it if she wants to.
And so we never did get off to, we had talked about taking, you ought to do this, take a trip on a freighter. That's what we wanted to do. And we talked about it with Jim and Virginia Arnold, but we never did get to go. But Jim and Virginia went in the spring and they had a marvelous time. They just got home.
But on those annual trips up there, you all took care of your family.
And we visit the family around and stop in New York and Washington to see friends, but we spent most of the time up with his family.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but Africa was the country that Wally was awfully interested in.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Algeria and all through there. He said of all the countries, I mean, Italy, for example, you don't feel the antiquity that you do in Africa. So I was always wishing we might get over there.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in the... What do you call the Arab quarter? The Casbah.
Oh, really?
That's all I've seen. And I wasn't impressed with antiquity, you see, so I've never really been there.
No.
Well, he was out in the... You know, out in the wilds, in the desert and things. And he said I have some letters that he wrote me during the war. You see, he was there at the very beginning when we first went into Africa. And I've been thinking I must get those letters out, because he wouldn't write long letters, but, you know, he just described that part of the country a bit. And did you see that movie?
No, we didn't see it. What are you going to do with those letters?
Am I going to do those? Well, I don't know what I'll do with them, but I thought I'd maybe sort of take those parts out of the letters and make a, you know, history of the
sure.
African campaign. Did you see that movie? Do you ever go to the movies?
You
I
know,
bet
your,
you don't, do
your,
you?
Your questions are all embarrassing. do we take the New Yorker and then do we read it?
I don't go very often to the movies. And I didn't go to see Patton because I thought I simply couldn't stand it to see that movie. Finally, Dick said, well, Mother, I think you ought to go. He said, they obviously took part of the battle El Guitar, in which Wally's battalion featured, and put it in General Patton's command. And so I thought, well, I have to go and see this. And Wally's general, he was in the 1st Division, and his general was Terry Allen. And then General, somebody the name of General Friedendahl was over the whole bunch of divisions. And Wally had a tank destroyer battalion, and they don't have tank destroyer battalions anymore. But at that time, what they did was to take, see, Wally had been a captain, and he had a little battery of artillery, and they took his battery and made it the nucleus of the tank destroyer battalion. But they didn't have any big artillery like we have now. So when we got to, the 1st Division got to Africa, you know, the Germans were marching right straight through. They just weren't being stopped at all. And it shows the battle, them coming from the Battle of Kasserine Pass in this movie. And, of course, there was a big defeat there, but the Americans were fighting under French general there, and they were all separated. So then they went on to the Battle of El Guitar, and what they took this Wally's battalion and placed the guns around. They'd go out at night and put the guns where they thought the tanks were going to come in the next morning and camouflage them. And the guns were not large enough to stop the German tanks, so they'd wait until they got awfully close, the tank, you know, got awfully close to this gun, and then they would shoot at these treads, these half tracks that make the tank move, and they would put it out so it couldn't move, and then I don't know what they did to the tank from then on, but anyhow, that's what happened at the Battle of El Guitar, and there's a book that I have home about it, and it was really Wally's little battalion that turned that whole tide there.
Mm-hmm.
And it says in the book that it was really something to see this little battalion going out and, you know, against this whole advance of the German tanks. Well, then somewhere in the movie it does say, Bradley says to Patton, Terry Allen slugging it out over there, and then some general got, and he said, there goes General Friedendahl. And Patton said yes and looked very respectful. Well, they were Wally's generals, and they had really stopped the advance at that point. Then, of course, Patton got in with his tanks and things. And but according to this book in the New York Times that I have, nothing was named, but I could tell where Wally was because his was the only battalion of that kind.
Mm-hmm.
And in the New York Times during the war, in little bits of print, it would tell what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell where Wally was just from that. But that was, they took an awful lot of losses in that battle of El Guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Wally had just lived to tell a story.
Percy Thompson was there, but I don't think that he had a battalion in the 32nd. I can't remember. But he told me that he saw the battalion when it came back from after that battle of El Zafar, that he saw Wally's battalion when it came back. And he said everyone in that battalion should have had the highest honors, you know, for what they did.
And you could see a little of it in the movie.
Well, all you could see in the movie was the way they placed the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And put the I don't
camouflage
them, and then they but the guns that they put in the movie were General Patton's guns. They were Wally's but and I expect that it was authentic, but Dick said obviously they took what happened at the Battle of El Guitar and put it in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what Dick thought.
Don't stop.
Oh, I know.
I'm telling Mark not to stop.
Your turn now.
But Wally never acted military.
Oh, he could.
Could he?
Oh, yeah. But do you know?
Well, he's a military man, I guess. Yeah, he's been in the army that long.
But he had his interest. Now, Percy Thompson really missed the army when he retired. He was really unhappy in civilian life.
Yeah.
And we often talked about it. I think Wally enjoyed his... He enjoyed civilian life as well as army life.
But he didn't act, didn't have any of the signs of the military on him.
Not the Wally that I
not the,
yeah.
You know, not
yeah.
as I saw him. No, whatever. He didn't bark at anybody, did he?
I never heard him bark at anybody, but I know that he just looked at him and they sort of told him bark. I never heard him bark at anybody.
He didn't need to.
No.
Oh, you mean he could really look at him?
He did. But you know, I don't know how he happened to tell me this once, but when it was very cold in the desert over in Africa, and he... it was something about covering your face up that brought this on, you know, to keep warm. And he said, yes, that sometimes he'd be out walking around, you know, at night when they were bivouacked or something in the desert over there, and the nights were very cold. And he said the soldiers would all have their faces covered. They didn't have sleeping beds, maybe, but always there. So he evidently was prowling around at night. And, I know they liked Wally very much. Any of the people that he worked with, they liked him. Even the Russians liked him.
But that wasn't in Africa.
No, that was in Vienna.
In Austria. Yeah.
In Austria.
I was in North Africa after battles. We went by Bozzetti. That was after the Naples campaign, so it's well on,
yeah.
You see. And I remember from the ship, Liberty ship. No, this was over on land there. We drove along there at an old. Olive orchard.
Mm-hmm.
And just as peaceful.
Yeah. And war right around the corner from
and
here.
That's where the tanks had slugged it out.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
But there was no sign.
Yeah. It was all grown up again. Mm-hmm. The olive orchard.
Mm-hmm.
You should go to see this Patton to see where all this
is. Well, one of my classmates was there.
In the tank battle.
Yes, and he got banged up.
Mm. Oh, that's a strange, strange. There'll never be another war like that, I guess. I hope there'll never be another war.
But it looks so peaceful.
Dick and I, of course, were back home, and when the first casualties that we had in Africa, there was a young lieutenant named Ned Steele that was in Wally's battalion, and we'd been up at Fort Devens, you know, and we had a big party one night. We had all the 1st Division there, the officers, in our house, and we didn't live on the post, but we had a big old house up there in New England. And nope, the general didn't want to go home. And he, you know, and it was a little bit of town that we lived in. And I was a little bit concerned about this party. And the Methodist minister lived right across the street from us. And his wife was a good friend of mine. So we invited them to the party, but of course they didn't come. They said they couldn't come. And, you know, at that time in New England, that little towns didn't like to have the army people come in. They just thought they didn't know what to expect. And so this was a very big party, and all the officers arrived in command cars. They had great big high things. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
They don't have them anymore, do they? And all of the streets were just lined with all these cars. Well, we had a buffet supper, and we had cocktails and a buffet supper. And then they sang, and they sang, and they sang until the middle of the night. They just sat around and sang. And, of course, nobody could go home until the general went home. And he was not about to go home. So, finally did go home, and so here was this quiet little town with all this singing going on in the middle of the night, you know. And then I remember Ned Steele and his girl, and well, a lot of the lieutenants stayed all night, and we didn't have that many rooms or that many beds, so they slept on the floor in the living room. They were all bunched along on the floor. I remember especially Ned Steele was there, and he was killed. The first one, he was fighting with the French, and he was one of the first ones that you, and of course Dick was a little boy, you know, well, yes, and these lieutenants, he'd known, they'd been in our house, and it was really rough those first days of the war, because most of our friends hadn't been touched by the war yet, and Dick's friends, because we were back in Binghamton then. And here Dick could read on the front pages of paper, you know, But I was going to tell you that the next morning that I asked Mrs. Wild, the minister's wife, if she heard any, if we disturbed anybody, she said, I knew she would hear if we had. She said, no, she hadn't heard a thing. But she said, you know, around the corner from us and down the hill is an old lady lived. And she said, she called her up early, and she said, you know, someone must have left their radio on all night last night. In the middle of the night, I heard this music going on. But she didn't know that it was us.
It's a good thing.
Now, see, that was earlier in the war.
That was before war even began. That was, I guess they knew war was going to start, but it was before Pearl Harbor.
Well, you mean Wally was stationed over there then?
No, this was up in Massachusetts.
Oh.
Up out of Fort Devens.
Yeah. No, they didn't want the military around.
Yeah. But they got sort of, so they liked us after Wally.
Is that when they started making the $2 bills?
Oh, they had $2 bills before. Yeah. Oh, when I was a little girl, they had $2 bills.
Well, my grandfather was in the Army, and he told me this story that when an Army post would be built near a town, and they'd complain about it, and they didn't want the Army there, they'd start issuing all the soldiers $2 bills in their pay, and pretty soon in the town, all these $2 bills would be floating around.
Oh, and so then they liked them. I see.
We're supposed to see how much money the Army post
was bringing. Oh, now that was clever.
But somehow I got the idea that's when they started making $2 bills.
And I think they had them before, but
yeah.
I never heard that before.
He got into the interior of Africa at that time.
Oh, they were around in Tunisia.
Yeah.
And Algeria. And I think that's all.
Well, what little information I have is that the interior of Africa starts about 4 or 5 miles from the Mediterranean, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know, but
I mean, it don't take long to get
to
the interior.
No, I guess you're right there. But I'll have to get his letters, and I'll tell you what he said about Tunisia.
Well, now you've got several documents you're going to show us.
Yeah.
We can look up the New Yorker one.
Yeah.
But we never saw Wally's article back in 64.
We didn't see that. Yeah.
And we haven't seen Paul.
Paul Roberts.
Yeah. Old Anthony David, he has really picked up, handled himself so nicely.
Doesn't
on that thing.
Doesn't he? That's very well for us, I think.
I'm so proud of him.
Yes.
Doesn't Miss Carr depend on him right now?
Well, he's the one that speaks around. Oh, yes.
She can't talk.
No, he does that.
Yeah.
Margie can talk, and she has talked, but not at any length, you know. She talked the afternoon at the hearing that you and Faye came to. Well, you know, there used to be a steamboat that went on the Akawaha. It had a funny name. Have you heard about it? It has the funniest name, Indian name. And people used to, it used to take, people on tours on the Akawaha. And a paddle wheel, I think it was. And so that's what Marjorie hopes that they'll do again, that they'll... She thinks it would be wonderful to have when they get the Akawaha restored and and get all this, nature and things, to have
is it possible to restore the river? Is that possible? Can it be done?
Well, no,
does that mean the dam has to go, or?
Well, I should think
so,
yeah.
Undo what has been done.
It will take some years to restore this forest and things. You know, some of the biggest cedars in Florida were down along that river.
Susan? You see, Marion not acquainted with our neighbors.
That is true.
Mrs. Chitty?
Yes, she was, she lives over in Shiloh, on the other side of McIntosh, and she's old, but she's lived in Florida since she married, I guess, almost, earlier, and I went over to see her today. She's been sick, but she...
Oh, she had?
Well, they'd been back to the hospital, and her legs were swelling again, and the doctor gave her some medicine. But I brought her a Pepsi. She likes Pepsi. And she's the most delightful person to talk to. Anything that she talks about, you can just see it. She started speaking about this old Dr. Daly that used to live over in Micanopy. His son, I think, is a doctor around here now. But she spoke of a time when she first got heart dropsy, she said. I don't know what it really is, but his heart drops again. And she had gone to this old Dr. Daly. Her husband took her, and another friend of theirs, Dove Anderson, or something like that, offered to drive him over. And she and her two boys and her husband all got in the car, and she was all swollen. She said she just looked like a stuffed duck. She said her arms were all swollen, and she had to hold them out like this, and her legs were swollen, and her feet were swollen, and she had her biggest dress. It was way too big for her, and she just kind of looked like, she said, just a stuffed sausage.
And the poor thing.
Well, she talks about it, and she went to Dr. Daly, and he laughed. He says, "Now, I'm not laughing at you, Miss Chitty, because you're so fat, swollen," he said, "but you certainly don't look like the Mrs. Chitty I knew last summer."
Oh, really?
She said that he examined her on the table and told her her kidneys were in very bad shape, and she said yes, she knew that. And he went to the door to talk to her husband, and the doctor had his back to her, and she could see her husband's face. So, as a doctor, and she said she couldn't hear him, but she could see her husband's face, and he turned pale. And she said his eyes, he had beautiful blue eyes, just went straight to her and just looked at her. And of course she just knew. And she was suspicious anyway. And she said, "Dr. Daly, I want you to tell me. I am not leaving this office till you tell me what's wrong." So he told her, and she said he took a handkerchief out of his pocket and wiped around his eyes and told her, "You've got the heart dropsy." And he said, "But you don't need to worry." He said, she said, "I know. My father had it, and he lived for years and years before he got it."
That's comforting.
And how old is she now?
She's 80. 80, I guess. White hair. But she said they got home. And
she's 82.
82.
She is.
Yeah, I'm 82. Quite old.
You can't tell it, though. I mean, because you know that a person's 80, but somehow they're not 80. They're whatever age they are, that they're
right.
Telling you the story.
Why they're reporting.
Yeah,
certainly.
While they're reporting.
She was, I don't know how old she was then. Her boys were still small, I guess 16 or so, maybe. But she said they got home late in the evening, and the boys, out on the porch, they got some benches and some planks and put it out on the porch and brought one of the bedspreads and mattresses out from the house and made her a bed out on the porch. And she lay there, and her husband went on to church. She told him to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys sat there on either side of her, you know, in the evening. It was a moonlit evening, she said. And she said one of them would go pop, kill a mosquito, and the other one on the other side would see one, and they hit one on her foot and say, "Mama, can you feel when the mosquitoes bite you?" She says, "Son, I haven't felt anything in this body for a long time." And they said, "Frankie, I guess it was, Mama, you can't die and leave us." And she said, "Son, I'm not going to die. Your grandpa lived for years and years with the doctor until he got excited." But she made it so clear to me. I can just see her, you know, with her two sons and waiting for her husband to come home from church in the evening, out there on that porch.
Yeah.
You know,
well, did she get over this, or did
she? Oh yeah,
she's perfectly well.
She's fine.
Well, that's wonderful.
Well, she has vigor. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
She was in here, and she walked on out one day, and old Cookie standing out there. After she left, he says, "That poor old thing, I'm going to do something for her." Why, she's 79, and she can do it for herself. And her mind works better than his.
Yes,
ever did. But you see, that's the way you read into people.
Yeah.
That poor old thing.
Yeah, poor.
Oh, she's...
Why, she, her body is supple, you see.
Oh, yeah.
And, she, you know, up until 2 months ago, when she first got this, whatever she's got now, she kept house, did all the cooking, and took care of her bachelor son, who ain't worth taking care of. Had no help.
Well, she still...
Up until 2 months ago, and she sort of weakened since then. She got something.
But even, you see, telling something like this, in the experience of telling it, there's nothing mournful about it.
Oh, no.
No, but
she's relating an experience.
It was real funny.
But
she talked about... Yeah, she talked about her latest visit to the doctor. And I said, Miss Chitty, you've probably never been sick before this. And she said, oh, yes, I had spells with my heart. And she talked about this the first time when she got all swollen up. And she can remember the doctor joking with her, and it's funny to her today. And she started laughing because they started kidding her about being able to climb into the car because she was so fat. She said she just had kind of waddled out the street, her legs were so. She says, I don't know what I look like.
And do you have to go home?
I sure do. I have to.
We'll let you ride the tractor.
Put some vines up on the fence now before it rains. Hopefully.
Well, I'm telling you, we're not going to do a thing. We're right here, and you knock around, and after a while we'll wash dishes and eat again.
Well, I think I better go home and let you all rest. I've talked your ears off.
No, I tell you what happened to me is that I heard the
horses
out there, and it was Noopy, and she was trying to get in Mrs. Shed. So I knew she was knocking on.
Now, Marion, let me tell you, it's been so long since we were in touch with her.
I know, so.
And
we've been threatening to have it. Make a weekend out of it.
Well, I think I almost did.
You know, I got that little black book, and I write down things to buy when I go to town. I always put your name down. Call me.
You don't get to my name very often, do you? No. Don't get that far.
I sort of wear out before I get through it.
I know. Look at what I've done to my neck here.
Well, now, let's see.
Will you come around and I'll give you these books? You can leave them too. But
like
I don't
to
have the Ocala plan, but you could get that from Paul Roberts.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Or you could go to the Florida Defender's office. You know where that is.
Yeah.
And they could give it to
you. Is
them.
That still up on there?
I think it's very interesting.
Yes, sir. We need a sort of a half-cock journalist who could put together a whole lot of these things that you know, Ms. Carr knows. Just so people would have a picture, you know. Of
yes, of just what you were saying today.
I wrote my own. Mm-hmm.
Well,
something.
Because you were with it all, huh?
Well. I don't know just what the state is now, but I sure hope we win that. Marjorie expected to get some money from a foundation or something to help with this lawsuit. Did you know, Tom Edison had several sons, and one son lived in New Jersey, and I can't remember what his first name is now, but
is that all it is?
Yeah.
Oh, we got plenty of time. We got to go down and get some wire.
Oh, well, you better get going Saturday afternoon. Don't they close?
Mm-mm.
Well, anyhow, this Edison's son and his wife came down to. They gave quite a lot of money to help about the Akawaha. I mean, $1,000 at a time. Which maybe isn't a lot for them, but they give them.